Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. Campaign finance records show that San Francisco's mayoral race is the most expensive in recent history due to David Lurie's $13 million campaign, which is largely self-funded, according to the San Francisco Chronicle. Records show Lurie has poured $8.4 million into his own campaign. After Lurie's spending in support of Mayor London Breed is the second highest at about $4.2 million so far, and Supervisor Aaron Peskin is once again in the lead in individual donations. His campaign raised over $121,000 from mid-September to mid-October, coming from contributions under the city's $500 limit, according to Mission Local. 48 Hills founder Tim Redmond reports that Ron Conway, who is close to Mayor London Breed, just dropped $100,000 into a committee opposing Supervisor Peskin's mayoral bid. On today's Your Call, we'll talk about the mayoral race, we'll follow the money, and then talk about where candidates stand on critical issues like housing, rent control, the homeless crisis, and inequality, and we'll find out how they differ. Also, when it comes to Mayor London Breed, what has her record been? What are your thoughts? We'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. What do you think overall about Mayor Breed's record and your overall thoughts on the mayoral race? How are you voting? You can also give us a call at yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Tim Redmond, founder of 48 Hills, a daily independent community news and culture site. Tim is former executive editor of the San Francisco Bay Guardian and a political and investigative reporting instructor at the University of San Francisco. Hi, Tim. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Of course, Rose. I'm always happy to be on your show. Thanks for inviting me.
Great to have you. Kelly Waldron is a data journalist with Mission Local, an independent news site that produces enterprise reporting on San Francisco's most critical issues, police reform, corruption, public health, housing, and homelessness. Hi, Kelly. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. Well, Tim, I want to start off with you. You have covered San Francisco politics for many years. And Heather Knight, who used to work for the Chronicle, who now works for the New York Times, has a very long story in today's New York Times called Mayor Breed's Pitch to Voters. I've lived San Francisco's struggles. London Breed is pointing to her difficult childhood as a reason she should win another term. Her opponents say her track record tells a different story. I know you have strong opinions, Tim, but before you share those, what are you hearing from everyday people who live in San Francisco about Mayor Breed's record?
Well, the voters in San Francisco, and it's not that different from around the country, are unhappy. The voters are unhappy with the status quo in general. In San Francisco, the negative feelings about London Breed are pretty high. She has, and the polls show this, she has pretty high negatives, although it's getting a little bit better for her over the last few months. But I think people feel like she hasn't done enough on homelessness. Mayor Breed created or helped create the narrative of San Francisco as a horrible crime-ridden place to get rid of District Attorney Chesa Boudin. And now it's kind of coming back to haunt her because people feel like she hasn't done enough around public safety and crime. There's a lot of discontent with the mayor. Now, there's, you know, three serious challengers, three people who are all within, you know, the margin of error polls. And there's, you know, there are some negative feelings about all of them too. But I feel like for London Breed, she is the incumbent, and being an incumbent always gives you an advantage. She has a ton of money from the likes of Ron Conway and also Michael Bloomberg, the former Republican mayor of New York, who's given her over $1 million, or given more than $1 million to a campaign committee helping to elect her. But from the start, as soon as there were serious challengers to her, it was clear that re-election is not going to be easy for her. Doesn't mean she's not going to win. With ranked choice voting, nobody knows exactly what's going to happen, and the polls are very mixed. But I think that the feeling on the streets is that voters want something different.
Kelly, you've been out there covering the candidates and talking to voters. What are you hearing on the streets of San Francisco?
I would agree with a lot of what Tim said. I think there is a lot of discontent. A lot of voters are unhappy with the state of the city. It's been a difficult recovery post-pandemic. And I think a lot of people are unhappy with downtown. And then again, there's this kind of negative narrative around the city in general and the sense of public safety and homelessness. Whether all of that is totally true or reflected in the data we have available is another question. But I would agree with what Tim said.
Well, we watched a number of debates and interviews, and we grabbed a lot of clips because you both have done excellent reporting on these issues. And so we want to play what the candidates are saying, and then you could give us some context and fact check what they are talking about and the claims that they're making. So let's talk about London Breed, since she is the current mayor of San Francisco. ABC7 recently asked Mayor Breed what she is going to do to deal with, and this came from an anchor at ABC7 who said that he often gets on public transportation and there are people yelling. I mean, a lot of us have obviously experienced, anyone who lives in San Francisco has experienced this. And so he said, what are you going to do to deal with mentally unstable people on public transportation and the streets?
We are working with the Drug Enforcement Agency, the U.S. Attorney's Office, our federal partners, our state partners with the California Highway Patrol and the National Guard, but not with M16 rifles on the corner, and our local law enforcement agencies. And we are making arrests of drug dealers and drug users in order to get people into treatment. That has not happened before. This coordinated effort to combat fentanyl, for example, which is one of the biggest challenges that not only San Francisco faces, but other cities around this country have had to endure this issue. And San Francisco is the only place where we have a coordinated state, federal, and local law enforcement effort to combat it, along with a number of issues that we know continue to persist. We have a lot of the capacity. It is starting to work, especially mostly in the daytime. We're still experiencing some challenges in the evening time. We're making people on the streets uncomfortable so that the only option is to accept what we are offering in order to get them the help and the treatment that they need.
Do you have the officers to do that?
Right now, we are understaffed with the San Francisco Police Department. But I will say the good news is, I have good news because, again, while my opponents are saying that this is all it takes or this is what needs to be done, it is so much more complicated than that. The reason why the Police Officers Association only endorsed my candidacy for mayor is because I have worked to provide them with the tools and to change the department in a way so that they can focus on doing their jobs. We are seeing bigger classes, including one that is almost at a capacity that exists now. The next one will be at capacity next month when we announce that class. And we are finally seeing people from other law enforcement jurisdictions transfer to San Francisco. That wasn't happening before, but it took a lot of removing barriers, adding opportunities to ensure that our officers have the equipment, the support, and what they need to be successful at their jobs, which is why San Francisco has one of the lowest violent crime rates in the country and has one of the lowest crime rates we've seen in over a decade. It is trending in the right direction. There's definitely more that needs to be done, but in the next 2.5 years, based on my plan, we plan to be fully staffed in the department, which takes into account retirees and other things. The other thing we've done is alternatives to policing, our street crisis response team for people struggling with mental illness. That's a non-law enforcement response. People who need wellness checks, we've taken that off the plate of our officers. We put out on the streets in our commercial corridors and downtown retired police officers who are ambassadors. So we built up the infrastructure to ensure that the work that needs to be done to protect the public is happening, and officers are definitely a part of that equation.
That is Mayor London Breed speaking recently on ABC7. So, Tim, London Breed says, quote, "We are making people on the streets uncomfortable so that the only option is to accept what we are offering." And then she talks about the non-law enforcement response and the street crisis response teams. So can you just tell us, how is this playing out on the streets?
Well, the most important thing to take away from that clip, yes, she talks about the non-law enforcement stuff in about, I didn't count, but maybe 20 seconds at the end of a rather long clip. She responded to a question about mentally ill people with a law enforcement response, right? And that is what she's doing. And in fact, that is what both Daniel Lurie and Mark Farrell are doing, is saying that the proper response to mental illness and drug addiction and drug use on the streets is a law enforcement response. And that's a really important thing to keep in mind, because we have decades of data that shows that that law enforcement response to drug addiction and mental illness doesn't work. You would think London Breed knows this, but there's also tons of data showing that forcing people into treatment for alcohol or drug use doesn't work. You can't force people into treatment that they don't want. It doesn't work. It doesn't stick. Right. So, and she also doesn't talk about the fact that the city simply does not have enough treatment space. There is, if everybody who had a substance abuse problem on the streets of San Francisco voluntarily sought treatment today, there would be nowhere near the capacity to handle all of them. There's also nowhere near the capacity in mental health beds for the treatment that many people need for mental illness. And that treatment is from my perspective, this is a public health issue, not a law enforcement issue. But the mayor has led the way in saying that the solution to the problem on the streets is a law enforcement solution involving the National Guard, involving bringing federal troops and state troops into San Francisco. And these are not people who are trained mental health counselors. These are not people who are, you know, trained to deal with people with substance abuse. These are people, this is an entirely law enforcement model that she's pushing. And as I say, that is the three more conservative candidates in the race are all taking that approach, that the solution to problems on the streets is a law enforcement solution. Again, she talked about how many more cops we're going to hire, which is a discussion around public safety, but not necessarily around mental health and substance use problems.
And then also, and Kelly, I'll ask you to respond in just a minute, but I also want to talk about homeless sweeps, because we did a show back in July about the conservatives on the Supreme Court ruling that cities can fine and arrest homeless people for sleeping in public spaces, even if they have nowhere else to go. And Mayor Breed got national media attention after this came down because she said she was going to launch aggressive homeless sweeps in San Francisco. I just watched a KPAX piece about Salesforce and their, you know, massive event that happens every year downtown. And they interviewed a number of people living on the streets who said they had to move, but they just went somewhere else. And so can you give us an update, Tim, on what is going on with these homeless sweeps and what has changed as a result of the Supreme Court decision?
Yeah, it's really important. Again, a law enforcement response to what is in fact a housing problem, not a law enforcement problem. The people who are on the streets of San Francisco are they're not going away. Well, some of them are. I'll tell you, one of my reporters interviewed a guy who was given a ticket. He was told he's got to leave San Francisco, and here's a bus ticket to Salinas. And the guy said, I've never been to Salinas. I don't know anyone there. I don't even know where Salinas is, but I guess I'm going there because that's the option they told me. You know, I'm going to get arrested or I'm going to take a bus ticket to Salinas. But generally speaking, they sweep the tent encampments and people are still on the streets. They have less shelter as it starts to rain and it starts to get cold. More of them will probably become ill, but you're not solving the problem. And again, the data is pretty good on this. You're not solving the problem with homeless sweeps. The other element of this, as Mission Local has reported, Joe Eskenazi has done a couple of good stories about this in Mission Local, is the jail is now overcrowded, and it's crowded with a population of people who are often mentally ill or substance abuse people who are going into withdrawal while they are in the county jail. And it's created a situation where the jail is on lockdown much of the time because we have a group of inmates who are as I say, mentally ill or going into withdrawal who are having violent episodes and attacking the deputies. There aren't enough deputies to take care of them. I mean, the jail in San Francisco, which, you know, was the jail in San Bruno was, you know, a model for how you can run a modern jail. It is now such a bad place that people who are in there, this is according to Mission Local, people who are in there are asking to go to state prison, because they would prefer it in state prison than the county jail. It is so overwhelmed. And this is not something that Mayor Breed or any of the other conservative candidates talk about when they talk about arresting our way out of this problem, sweeping people off the streets, giving them tickets. You think a homeless person who can't afford a place to live is going to be able to pay a ticket? So that is, I think, what's going on right now is people are losing their tents, they're losing their possessions, and they have no place to go because we do not have adequate affordable housing for people. But the mayor talks about, you know, shelters. The shelters are, first of all, congregate spaces, which we are, the pandemic is not over, and they are congregate spaces, and they are spaces that are not, that don't make sense for a significant percentage of that population. So it's almost like it's just, it's inhumanity. We're taking people's possessions away and saying they can't have a tent, but then it starts to rain. They're still on the streets. They're still sleeping on the streets. The homeless population has not gone away, except, you know, the ones that, I guess, got a bus ticket to Salinas.
Well, to that point, Kelly, Tim mentioned Joe Eskenazi's really important reporting on this. He also reported that on August 1st, Mayor London Breed issued the Journey Home Executive Order mandating that homeless people being swept off the streets be offered a bus ticket out of town before being offered shelter or other services or arrested. So what would you like to add, Kelly, about London Breed's record on this? And we know that this cannot be solved in San Francisco without the federal government. It's not like London Breed can, on her own, solve this issue. But she is issuing orders, and she does have a lot of power. So can you talk about that based on the reporting you've all done at Mission Local?
Yes, I think Tim put that very well, that, you know, describing this issue at large, it's a complex issue with no easy solution. And, you know, I will say that I don't know so much about the federal resources available for this, but the Mayor Breed has put a lot of emphasis on doing sweeps recently, which, as Tim mentioned, isn't really a long-term solution. There's a lot of good reasons why individuals refuse the offer of shelter that it is required that they are offered. I believe it's the either shelter or a ticket to somewhere else. But, you know, the shelters are often for very short stays, for one or two nights. Often residents can't bring in their belongings or pets, and then you're kind of taken away from your community and, you know, the kind of home you've built. So it makes sense that a lot of people, this isn't a solution for many people. And she's kind of drawn a lot of criticism for that. And again, some of the other candidates running in this race are supportive of these sweeps, and perhaps have placed less emphasis on talking about the longer term solutions.
Tim, are any of the candidates talking about the root causes of this crisis and how to actually solve this without just pushing people to a different neighborhood?
Or pushing people to a different city, which will then, right, you know, then we'll get the retribution. Will those start pushing people back to San Francisco? I mean, it's just kind of insane. I think, as I say, the London Breed, Mark Farrell, and Daniel Lurie are all approaching homelessness, substance use, and mental illness as law enforcement issues, as things that the cops can solve. Aaron Peskin is the only one who's basically said that the sweeps don't work. The root cause of this issue, I think, is very clear. The root cause of this issue is, you know, 30 years of massive economic inequality. And yes, part of the problem is that San Francisco has not had enough resources to build enough affordable housing for people on the streets. And that is, in fact, a federal issue. The federal government used to give cities money to build public housing and affordable housing. And that, you know, that has largely vanished. There's still a little federal money left out there. But so obviously it's a federal issue, but it's also an issue of economic inequality. I mean, a couple of years ago, the RAND Corporation, which is a conservative think tank in Southern California, did a study on this and concluded that if the tax structure in the United States today was the same as it was in 1975, pre-Ronald Reagan, the lower 90%, the bottom 90% of Americans would have an additional $50 trillion. $50 trillion is the money that has been taken by the top 10% away from the 90%. Well, that is one of the roots of the homelessness crisis right there. And again, that is not something that the mayor of San Francisco can single-handedly address, but it is important to talk about the root causes of this problem, a lack of affordable housing and massive economic inequality, which is included in San Francisco. I mean, look at the city. We've got, 40 billionaires living in San Francisco, and we've got, 5,000 people living on the streets. That is something that I think everyone needs to talk about.
So what else stands out for you, Kelly, when it comes to dealing with and trying to solve this issue, what stands out for you based on what you've heard from the other candidates and how they differ?
And how they differ? I think there is definitely more of an emphasis on law enforcement from Daniel Lurie, Mark Farrell in particular, and Mayor London Breed. I think there is also, to go back to the kind of public safety discussion, there is this sentiment of dissatisfaction and playing into that and kind of talking down about San Francisco. I alluded to this before, but in a lot of ways, things are better in the city in terms of crime rates. Most crimes are way down compared to the last couple of years. And, you know, when you go further back too, and that goes for violent crimes and smaller things like robberies. And, you know, even though the statistics are showing that things are getting better, people are feeling worse about the state of the city. And I think some of the candidates are really playing into that dissatisfaction. And as Tim mentioned before, Mayor London Breed kind of played into this around the time of the Tessa Boudin recall. But now it's kind of coming back at her because, you know, she's in part responsible for this. So there's kind of an effort on her campaign to put a positive spin on things and now refer to these statistics and what we know about the state of crime and public safety.
What are you hearing from Supervisor Aaron Peskin? If he's criticizing Mayor Breed and says he does not agree with homeless sweeps, what does he say he would do if he becomes mayor?
Are you asking me? Or no, go ahead.
Well, just quickly, I'll jump in and say that, you know, first of all, Peskin is definitely running a much more positive campaign, focusing on, kind of a positive image of San Francisco. And he places a lot of emphasis on talking about affordable housing and building more affordable housing. So I would say that is kind of a key component of his platform to address housing insecurity.
Tim?
Yes, first of all, I will give the full disclosure that I give when I write stories about this. Both my son and my daughter are working on the Aaron Peskin for Mayor campaign. So that is the full disclosure, and you can take that for what it is. I think Peskin is the only one who's talking really seriously about building a lot more affordable housing in the city. In fact, the voters of San Francisco have passed two ballot initiatives, raising taxes on wealthy people, on big corporations, and on high-end real estate sales to raise money. And it's now in the neighborhood of $300 million a year that is supposed to go for affordable housing. And Mayor London Breed has refused to spend that money on affordable housing. She has put that into other things, including, you know, more police, right? And the voters of San Francisco intended that money to be spent on affordable housing. I think that if Aaron Peskin is elected mayor, we will see some of that money go back into building more affordable housing, and which is, you know, obviously a huge crisis in the city. And, you know, when the candidates talk about housing, I mean, again, there is a housing crisis in San Francisco. There is a housing crisis in the United States of America. But the data shows, and there's been numerous studies on this recently, the data shows that it is an affordable housing crisis, not just a housing crisis. If you have lots of money, if you're a wealthy person, it's not a problem finding a place to live in San Francisco. Right? If you can afford $5,000 a month rent in San Francisco, if you can afford a $2 million house, there's plenty of places to live. It's not, if you're wealthy, there is no housing crisis in San Francisco. The housing crisis in San Francisco is for affordable housing. And I think Peskin is paying more attention to that than the other candidates who are talking more about, you know, getting rid of obstacles to building more market rate housing and encouraging more market rate housing being built and encouraging developers to build and build more housing. The mayor is talking about raising the height limit on commercial corridors in San Francisco to 8 stories to allow more dense housing to be built. But that is going to be market rate housing primarily, and that's going to be expensive housing. And the idea that that's going to solve the housing crisis is just a fantasy. So I do think that there's a distinction between Peskin and the other three candidates in their emphasis on non-market-based affordable housing.
Well, let's play a clip before we go to break, since we're talking about housing. Here is Supervisor Aaron Peskin on ABC7 talking about his housing plan.
Many people don't know this, but I have actually voted to approve over 100,000 new homes in San Francisco at all income levels. a matter of fact, more than every other candidate who is running for mayor combined. And I've done that by working with neighborhoods, not against neighborhoods. And in my own district, I've built every kind of housing, affordable housing on the former freeway parcels, a homeless shelter, a transitional age youth shelter, and market rate housing. But remember, I also represent the densest, geographically smallest district, but I've proposed plans of building hundreds of units on the Kirkland bus yard now that we're turning that from diesel buses to electric buses. And there are many opportunities to grow San Francisco, and there's a right way of going about that, and I'm pursuing that way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at the same time, you have been particularly critical of the rezoning that the city is undertaking right now. You've spent some time over the past few months visiting different neighborhoods, and, you know, there's been a lot of anxiety fomented about the rezoning that we have to do under the state mandate. So, you know, is that responsible? You know, would you say you want to encourage housing across the city to participate in that kind of, you know, to give people the idea that this is going to kind of destroy the character of the city?
So I don't know if your viewers know, but there are 73,000 shovel-ready, fully approved units in our pipeline that aren't being built because interest rates are too high. And my plan is for the city to offer tax-exempt bond financing, not paid for by taxpayers, revenue bond financing, in order to start building those 73,000 units. They're fully approved. They're ready to be built. We also have 60,000 vacant units in San Francisco, and I have plans to bring those on the market and give people incentives and reasons to rent those units out.
So before we go to break, Tim, is this true? Supervisor Aaron Peskin has voted to approve over 100,000 new homes in San Francisco, and there are 73,000 shovel-ready units that are not being built right now because of interest rates?
That is absolutely true. Now, keep in mind, Aaron Peskin has been on the Board of Supervisors for almost 25 years. And over that period of time, lots and lots of things like the Eastern Neighborhoods Plan, the plan for redevelopment of Bayview Hunters Point, Treasure Island, which has plans for many thousands of units of housing, have all come before the Board of Supervisors. And in the end, he has voted for all of them. But he has always tried to make the developers give something back to the city. Right? And that's one of the things that Aaron Peskin has been very good at over the years, is negotiating deals where, yes, we're going to approve this development, but X amount has to be affordable housing, and you have to give X amount for muni, et cetera, et cetera. But yes, that's true. But it is also true that there are 73,000 units, and this is public record. This is the planning department website shows us there are 73,000 units that are shovel ready. They could break ground today. No NIMBYs have stopped them. No lawsuits have stopped them. They're done. The process is ready. But, you know, the most of this housing that has been not built in San Francisco has been blocked not by NIMBYs or environmentalists, but by the Federal Reserve. When, you know, these developers are not about building housing. They're about making money. And, you know, the investment for that, and that is some of it. It's not really even banks either. It's, you know, it's pension funds. It's real estate investment trusts. It's international speculative capital that finances these buildings. And if the interest rate is too high and the rate of return on the investment isn't enough, they're just not going to build. So it's not because anyone is stopping these projects. There are 73,000 units that they could bring the bulldozer in tomorrow and break ground. But because of interest rates and the way housing is financed today, the profit level isn't high enough. Even at market rate, even at building housing that would rent or sell for a very high level, the profit rate isn't high enough. There's also tons of units that are vacant, and some of them are in these newer high-rise condo buildings where people have bought units as an investment. We've seen a lot of international money buying units as an investment and then just keeping them vacant because they're not looking to live there or rent it out. They're looking to put that as a safe haven for their money. So there's all of these different reasons why there is a lot of housing that could be built and that is vacant in San Francisco, but is not being built for reasons that have nothing to do with opposition from Aaron Peskin or anyone else.
And Kelly, you did a great job of looking at which industries are giving to which candidates. So you look at real estate investors, for example. What strikes you when it comes to people who make money off of housing, whether it's rentals or you know, developing so people can outright buy a home? where are these people giving their money?
So that's a great question, and it is certainly interesting to look at it. There is kind of a clear alliance there. For instance, Mark Farrell has received money from individuals with real estate interests who run real estate companies, and certainly his campaign is something they would favor his plan. Same goes for Mayor London Breed. I believe she also has support from a lot of urbanist groups. I would add as well that just to go back to what Peskin said in the clip, you know, he made mention of his district being the densest district in the city. And I think that's an important election discussion, is not only do we build more housing and how, but where. And the western side of the city has seen very, very little development compared to other areas. And, you know, hence the Planning Commission's plan and Mayor Breed's plan to up zone commercial corridors and the kind of selected corridors, particularly on the west side. And her campaign has placed more emphasis on kind of building more housing everywhere, whereas the other candidates, even those who are pro, you know, kind of side with developers and kind of amicable with developers, have you know, placed less emphasis on building in all areas and neighborhoods. But yeah, to go back to your question, it certainly Mark Farrell is who I've looked at the closest, and he's gotten a lot of interest from real estate groups. And Peskin has gotten, you know, money against him from those same groups, and also has gotten money from tenants groups and labor unions. So there's clear alliances there.
We're going to take a quick break. Kelly Waldron is a data journalist with Mission Local. Tim Redman is founder of 48 Hills, former executive editor of the San Francisco Bay Guardian, and political and investigative reporting instructor at the University of San Francisco. On today's Your Call, we are talking about the San Francisco mayoral race, the most expensive in recent history due to Daniel Lurie's $13 million campaign, which is largely self-funded, according to the San Francisco Chronicle. What are your thoughts about the mayoral race and San Francisco overall? What issues do you care most about, and who do you think would be the best person to become the mayor at this critical time? Do you think Mayor London Breed deserves another chance, or do you think it's time to bring someone else in? We'd love to hear your thoughts on this. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up on our media roundtable, we'll discuss the consequences of the upcoming election for press freedom and the dangers involved when billionaires like Jeff Bezos own newspapers like The Washington Post. We've also been asking on this show why gun violence has not gotten more attention in this election cycle. Well, tomorrow we're going to discuss a very important ProPublica investigation by Corey Johnson called Without Knowledge or Consent. He writes that in the late 90s, the gun industry launched a secret project to elect firearm-friendly politicians. Manufacturers gave operatives sensitive information about their customers without their consent. The story behind the data sharing and its impact has never been revealed until now. We hope you can join us tomorrow. And then on election night, we hope you can join us at 111 Minna in San Francisco. We will be hosting a live broadcast starting at 7 p.m. Find information at kalw.org and click events. Today, we're talking about the San Francisco mayoral race. We'd love to hear your thoughts. What are your thoughts about the most pressing issues facing the city, and who are you voting for? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Tim Redmond is founder of 48 Hills, a daily independent news site. Kelly Waldron is data journalist with Mission Local, a news site that produces enterprising reporting about San Francisco's most pressing issues. Let's talk again about Well, first of all, so Daniel Lurie is new to politics. We'll talk about him in a minute, but tell us more about Mark Farrell, Kelly, since you have been reporting on him. What do you think people need to know about? Let's talk about the most critical issues, of course, housing and the homeless crisis. What stands out for you about what he's done and what he says he plans to do?
So Mark Farrell is one of the main contenders. He is the former supervisor for District 2, which covers the marina. And he most recently, for the last 6 years or so, has worked for his venture capital firm, Thayer Ventures. As we've already discussed, he does place a great emphasis on law enforcement and increasing police staffing. And this is something he speaks a lot about in terms of his record as well. As supervisor, he was supervisor for a total of 8 years, I believe. And he was also interim mayor for 6 months when Ed Lee died. And he's a great places a great emphasis on law enforcement and encampment sweeps and kind of a shelter first approach to homelessness. And his record, he will often talk about increasing police staffing. He did chair the budget committee for several years. But as a District 2 supervisor, you kind of have a sort of limited jurisdiction over the police force. So, I'm not sure if that's entirely down to him in that position. But some important things to note about his campaign are, you know, the great emphasis on public safety. And also, you know, we've been discussing or covering a lot of his campaign finances. And, he's set up a ballot measure committee to support Proposition D, which is the Together SF proposition to reform the city's commissions. And that has drawn scrutiny, kind of his handling of the finances there, which I can also go into.
Well, to that point, Tim, you wrote a whole piece about corruption. And Andrew Brobst for 48 Hills did a two-part video primer on corruption allegations. And he writes that Mark Farrell has been pointing fingers at London Breed, but Farrell is facing heat for spending thousands of taxpayer dollars on lavish dinners, even receiving a record fine from the Ethics Commission. There's a lot going on with Recology. Aaron Peskin is pushing for Prop C to create a new city watchdog. We could probably spend an entire hour or more on this, Tim, but what do people need to know about what is happening with corruption allegations in San Francisco?
Well, we could spend more than an hour on this. But there has been at City Hall for quite a while an ongoing level of corruption that we've seen. You know, two senior members of the Breed administration are now in prison on different types of bribery scandals. But with the campaign finance stuff, which is what we're focusing on right here, one of the things that that infuriates a lot of people is, okay, so Mark Farrell violated the law, the Ethics Commission found, when he ran for supervisor by coordinating with what is supposed to be an independent expenditure committee. I mean, the rules are real simple. Individuals can give $500 maximum to a candidate. But if you set up an independent expenditure committee that's supposed to be completely independent of the candidate under the Supreme Court's rulings in Buckley v. Vallejo and Citizens United, that committee can spend all the money they want and raise all the money they want from anyone they want. And that's where the big money gets spent. But they aren't supposed to coordinate. So they coordinated. Farrell got fined $100,000 and he ended up settling for $25,000, which of course would be paid by donors. And it's almost as if all of this campaign finance chicanery that we're seeing that will end up at the Ethics Commission after the election is over, maybe a year from now, will end up investigating and fining people. And those fines will be paid out of campaign funds as if it's just a cost of doing business. It's just, you know, violating campaign finance laws in San Francisco, almost it feels like it has no consequences. It's just, you know, we've raised a lot of money from a lot of rich donors. And if we end up getting fined $25,000, oh, well, that's just a cost of doing business. And it's extremely frustrating because we have these laws that are supposed to protect the public and they're supposed to protect the integrity of elections. And they just simply aren't being enforced.
So several former city officials are filing requests for a criminal investigation into Mark Farrell, citing campaign finance violations. Here he is responding to those allegations on CBS.
This is the machine trying to attack me as a front runner in this race. That is blatantly transparent and should be transparent to every single San Francisco voters. They are doing this only to support the candidates that they are backing. It has no basis in truth at all.
Former Mayor Mark Farrell defending himself against allegations leveled by three other former mayors, Art Agnos, Frank Jordan, and Willie Brown, who respectively support Aaron Peskin, Daniel Lurie, and London Breed. They are asking Attorney General Rob Bonta and Brooke Jenkins, District Attorney of San Francisco, to look into whether Farrell has inappropriately used money from his Prop D campaign. Farrell has consistently denied any wrongdoing.
Every penny has been accounted for. I've disclosed everything. Again, everything we have ever done, vetted by, suggested by, cleared by counsel. We will always operate that way.
So thanks to CBS for that clip. We're getting some emails from listeners saying that they are so fed up with so much money in politics. And Art says, can you please talk about the money that's supporting these candidates and what it represents in terms of those spending it and the desired outcomes of those who are donating it? Kelly, again, we could spend all day talking about this because you really broke it down, looking at who's giving to what candidate. And in some cases, I mean, you've got investment firms based in other states giving to some of the candidates. But when you look at maybe the big dollars, what stands out for you and what do they want in return? Who's getting the most money at this point from big donors?
That's a great question. So in terms of the mayoral candidates, Daniel Lurie has by far the most money of any candidate. But the big caveat is that he's self-funding his campaign. So he's the heir to the Levi Strauss empire and has vast wealth that he can pour into his own campaign, and also his family members who have heavily donated to a PAC supporting his campaign. His mother, Mimi Haas, gave $1 million supporting him. In terms of the other candidates, you know, Breed and Farrell also have their fair share of big backers, and both candidates have a PAC supporting them as well. As I mentioned, Farrell does have big support from some real estate interests, namely Thomas Coates, who is a millionaire real estate investor. And, you know, we can't really know what these donors are what their intentions really are. But, you know, one might imagine that real estate interests are kind of counting on you know, more development being possible or easier in certain places, for example. I think it's also really interesting to look at the ballot committees. You know, several candidates have a committee for a ballot measure, which is kind of a typical practice. For instance, Mayor Breed has a committee supporting Proposition O, which is the reproductive freedom proposition. Mark Farrell notably has a committee supporting Proposition D, which has by far raised the most money. I believe it's over $9 million now that has been raised for Prop D. And a lot of that has come from a small handful of wealthy donors. For example, Michael Moritz, who's a billionaire venture capitalist who has endorsed Farrell and this measure. And with Proposition D, you know, it proposes to cut a lot of bureaucracy in the city by cutting the number of commissions in half and also expanding mayoral power. So giving the mayor more agency to hire and fire department heads, which, you know, a lot of people would argue that the mayor in San Francisco already has a lot more power than in other places. So, I guess a lot of these big donors are kind of giving with the hopes of cutting government bureaucracy and reducing oversight. You know, commissions or citizen advisory boards that provide oversight for different departments in the city. So a lot of wealthy interests are set on kind of reducing that.
Tim, what would you add? I mean, given that this is the most expensive race in recent history due to Daniel Lurie's $13 million campaign, which is largely self-funded, that's how we started this show. So he's getting a lot of publicity for the money that he's spending on his own campaign.
Yes, but I think the larger context of this is there are a small number, perhaps half a dozen, very, very rich people, billionaires, who are trying to essentially take over control of San Francisco politics. And they started a couple years ago with groups like Grow SF and Together SF that are portrayed as grassroots groups, but are actually entirely funded by a couple of billionaires. And they were very successful in taking over the Democratic Party in the spring. And they are leveraging that to use the Democratic Party endorsement to get candidates that they want for the Board of Supervisors and for mayor. And they have an agenda. One of the reasons that Thomas Coates likes Mark Farrell is that he is a virulent opponent of rent control. And Aaron Peskin has made rent control a big issue in this campaign. And that's one of the reasons that there's big real estate money going against him, because he wants to expand rent control. And some of these folks are, as I say, virulently against rent control, or certainly against expanding rent control in San Francisco. Then there's the larger issue of regulation. The tech industry, which is, as I say, the most of the money that's coming into San Francisco right now, other than Daniel Lurie's money, it's coming from big tech, from wealthy tech investors. Chris Larson is a cryptocurrency billionaire. Michael Moritz is a VC billionaire who made money investing in tech companies. And what they don't want is the city to regulate and tax tech companies. And their agenda is to elect a mayor who's friendly with them, get rid of commissions, which are citizen oversight, but also regulatory bodies. Let the mayor hire department heads who will look the other way at when tech companies try new things in San Francisco that may be dangerous, may be difficult, and get out of their way. And I think that that's largely their agenda. And it's, they're really against Aaron Peskin because Aaron Peskin has historically tried to regulate tech, whether it's Airbnb, Uber and Lyft, self-driving cars. He's the one who said, look, let's slow down and make sure this is actually going to work for the people of San Francisco before we just let it go ahead and happen. And I think that that's one thing that they really fear.
And Tim, where do the candidates stand on rent control? Because this is so important to so many people. You write that Mark Farrell and Daniel Lurie oppose expansion of rent control.
They both have said that they would not expand rent control. Right now in San Francisco, anything built after 1979 is exempt from rent control. Any building that's been built after 1979 is completely exempt from rent control. Aaron Peskin got a measure through the board that would expand rent control to any building built before this November, right? And basically put, tens of thousands of new units under rent control. That only will happen, of course, if the California voters pass Prop 33, because the exemption of new buildings from rent control, or buildings since 1979, is in state law. So if the voters pass Prop 33, this would go into effect. Both Lurie and Farrell have said they do not favor expanding rent control. Mayor London Breed did sign Peskin's bill. She did not oppose it, and she did sign it, so it would actually go into effect if Prop 33 passes. However, London Breed has not been an outspoken advocate of expanding rent control in her time as mayor.
We have just a couple of minutes left. Tim, you pointed to a very effective tool at the San Francisco Chronicle website, and it tells you how the candidates differ on certain issues, because there's obviously a lot of noise out there. You can watch the debates, but even watching a couple hours of debate, you have a hard time really figuring out where do they stand on these issues. So the Chronicle has something very simple that just shows, do they support rent control? Do they support more police on the streets? I think it's just a great tool. So thanks for pointing that out. What else would you like listeners to know about the major differences between these people running for mayor?
Well, I think we have three candidates who are running to the right. And London Breed, for the last 2 years, has been moving consistently more towards the right, particularly on economic, regulatory, homeless, and law enforcement issues. Lurie and Farrell are both running to her right, or trying to. And it's basically like there's, again, I will quote Joe Eskenazi at Mission Local, who had a great line. He said, the debate in San Francisco over the Tenderloin is whether we bring in the National Guard or the Navy SEALs. And that is kind of the direction that those three candidates have all gone, trying to outflank each other as being tougher on homeless people, meaner to homeless people, more cops, more bring in the National Guard, bring in the Navy SEALs. And Peskin is the only one who's kind of on what I guess in Europe we would call center left. I mean, Aaron Peskin is not a socialist. He's not a leftist, but he's much more of a center-left progressive type. But what I would tell people to do is, you know, in the famous line from Watergate that you talked about at the beginning of the show, follow the money. Mm-hmm. Look at where these folks' money is coming from, because Breed, Farrell, and Lurie all have billionaire backers. They all have very, very wealthy people who in different ways are backing them. And those folks, you know, they're not stupid. They're not putting billions of dollars or millions of dollars into supporting a candidate just because they like to shake their hand or they think they're a personal friend. This is because they have an agenda and they have a political agenda. And if you look at the political agendas of the people who are backing the candidates and putting millions of dollars into these independent expenditure groups, that will give you a sense of where they think those candidates will stand.
Hmm. Kelly, what would you like to add and final thoughts? We've got about a minute left.
I think it's really important to follow the money. We have a tool on Mission Local's website where you can look through each of the propositions and see who is giving for or against it. And I think that's really telling. You know, for instance, Proposition L would fund rideshare company or ride hailing companies like Uber, Lyft, and Waymo. And those companies, Uber and Lyft, have given heavily against the measure to fund Muni. So that's just an instance of, you know, kind of a clear-cut example of looking at the money and what interests that money represents. A lot of it's on our website. We've had regular dispatches with the mayoral candidates' campaigns and where they're getting their money from. So I would encourage your listeners to have a read through and see for themselves.
Kelly Waldron is a data journalist with Mission Local. They have done fantastic reporting on these races and so many more. They've got one right now called How Are the 34 San Francisco Supervisor Candidates Voting in This Election? missionlocal.org. We've also been joined today by Tim Redmond, founder of 48 Hills. They also do very important reporting on politics in San Francisco, 48hills.org. Kelly and Tim, huge thanks to you for joining us, and thanks to your entire team for the important work you all do. Thank you.
Thank you, Rose, for having us on.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.